feel like we've already had church. Amen. I'll see you all next week. Well, how about a sermon? How's that sound? What's a sermon? You're about to find out. You're about to be sermoned. Just turned it into a verb. You guys like that? Well, hey, here's the title for our sermon this morning. It's called There's No Surprise Today. And here's what I mean by that. My guess is that you pretty much all know how the story goes. Oh, it just makes me laugh. We gathered together every year to celebrate resurrection. Chances are you've probably heard this story once, maybe a second time. Maybe this is your third time hearing about the empty tomb. Is this story new for anyone here this morning? Just as I suspected. Now, when you're a pastor, you are expected to give pretty much your best sermon on Easter every single year. No pressure, Dave. But there's this challenge that comes with it where everyone has heard the story before. So there's no surprise. So the challenge becomes, well, how do you tell the story of Easter, or better yet, how do you tell the story of resurrection in a way that is inspiring or in a way that brings new life to the story, that brings new meaning? But I would argue, how do you give a sermon or how do you talk about resurrection in a way that each person sitting here this morning can experience resurrection? Because if I were to ask this question, why are you here? There's probably some of you, you're here because the person next to you kind of dragged you and made you come to church this morning. There's others, you're here because, well, it's what we do on Easter. We go to church and then we eat ham, and that's how we do it. But my guess is we're all here for something deeper. Because chances are, if you're like me, if you're human, which I think pretty much, I'm sorry, I don't have any of those little things that you can check if you're human, any of those, but my guess is that you would all check that box. But if you're here this morning, if you're human, if you're breathing, there are areas in your life that have gone numb. There's probably some places in your soul that they feel void of life. Some places that have died. Maybe there are some places that all the color has been drained away and it feels as if you're living in a black and white movie. The vibrancy that you once experienced, the life that you once felt, that buoyancy, that little bounce that you once had to your step, it's no longer there. And so you're here this morning and you're hoping, maybe you're trusting, you're believing that in some way this resurrection that happened 2,000 years ago, it can bring them a little more life and a little more color to your soul. Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you are like, what happened to my arms? You've been sleeping on your arm, and so you can maybe feel the left arm, maybe you feel the right arm, or maybe you don't feel any arm, and you kind of have to, have you ever done this before? Are you like me, right? You have to shake that arm, and at first you have a freak out moment. You're like, oh, my arm is gone. Ah. And you like you use the other arm to try to feel, and you're like, oh my goodness, all right, it's still there, but it feels really numb. Because you've been sleeping on it, and all the blood has sort of, it's been drained from the arm, and so you have to shake it back to life. My prayer is that wherever the blood has been drained from your life, that you would begin to have some blood flow into those areas again. Or maybe you've never experienced that before, but maybe what you're hoping for, what you're here for this morning, is something that people experienced in the movie theater many, many years ago. Something that looked a bit like this. Oh. who's going to go back and watch Wizard of Oz this afternoon. Yeah, one of the first movies to feature color. Imagine that. You're sitting here. Everything is black and white. That's what you're used to. Dorothy's in Kansas. The door opens up, and all of a sudden, it's a world of color. You're here this morning because that's what you desire for your life. A life of color. A life where the blood flows back to the places where it has been drained away from. Now, I mentioned it's challenging for a pastor about how to give the Easter message. And this year was no different. And recently, we were watching this TV show called Ted Lasso. Any Ted Lasso fans? So we were working our way through the second season of Ted Lasso. And there was this phrase that I heard in one of these episodes, and I guess it must have gotten lodged into my brain. You ever have that happen to you before? You're watching a TV show, a movie, someone says something, and this phrase gets lodged into your brain. Well, the next morning, I woke up, and I had this phrase in my head immediately when I woke up. And I jumped out of bed, grabbed my notebook, and I wrote my Easter sermon. I actually toyed with the idea of titling this sermon an Easter sermon inspired by Ted Lasso. Here was the phrase: hiding behind your intellect. There was this team psychologist in the second season, and she was talking about some of the things in her life that were causing her to move forward, some things that were keeping her stuck. And one of the things that was said to her is that she was stuck because she was hiding behind her intellect. She was really, really intelligent. She was really, really smart. But that was simply acting as a protective mechanism. It was protecting her heart. Here's the truth about resurrection. You can't rationalize it. You can't explain it. And you can't prove it. You can't do any of it. If I were to go up to you, tell me why resurrection, if you were to put into words, why did the resurrection happen? Did the resurrection happen? You simply can't do it because there's some things in life that are beyond intellect. There are some things in life that are beyond what we can put into words. And so the resurrection, it's not something that you can prove. And if you try to rationalize it, if you try to make sense of it, you're probably going to be stuck for a while. You're going to just be spinning around in this vortex because resurrection is something to be experienced. Here's Paul in 1 Corinthians. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. The intelligence of the intelligent, I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Here in this room, there are probably some people who are really, really skeptical. Someone got raised from the dead? How is that even possible? Stuff like that just doesn't happen. There's other people here where the truth of resurrection is something that you believe. Maybe you've believed it for many years. It's here in your head, but it hasn't quite transferred its way down into your heart. You might have some arguments for why the resurrection happened. There's plenty of books written about this, plenty of books proving. But I think one of the greatest tragedies of the Christian faith is that we have turned it into an intellectual religion. That we have made Christianity, following Jesus, something that we can prove with words. But just like resurrection, Christianity is not a faith that you can intellectually prove. You can try it, but you'll be stuck here in your head. And there's plenty of books written about this, and quite honestly, they're not the most helpful. Because resurrection is not something that you can put into words. Where's the wise person? Where's the teacher of the law? Where's the philosopher? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? I would argue that resurrection is something that you experience. So when you're here this morning and you come celebrating resurrection, what you really want is you don't want a sermon proving something that happened 2,000 years ago. And yes, we're here today because Jesus was bodily raised from the dead. I was on my friend's podcast this week, and at the end of the podcast, there was one person who he sort of facilitates the conversation. So he asked my friend, he's a pastor, he said, "Jeff, what would you like to tell everyone here as we're leading up into Easter?" And my friend says, "Well, for me, it's all about the bodily resurrection of Jesus." He said, "People can have all sorts of different ideas about the Christian faith, but I hold my ground. I stand firm on the bodily resurrection of Jesus." And then this facilitator asks me, "Hey, Dave, what would you want everyone to know?" And I said, "How can I top that one? There's no way I could possibly top that." And I said, "So of course, I agree with Jeff." I said, "But I would take it a step further. And the step that I would take is that my prayer is that not only would we trust that truth, but my prayer is that we would actually experience the resurrected Christ. Because I believe the resurrected Christ is just as present with us today as Jesus was 2,000 years ago when he was raised from the dead, when the tomb was empty. And here are two of my favorite resurrection stories. This one is Acts 9, the story of Saul before he became known as Paul. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and he asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, if there's anyone in Damascus who followed Jesus, what was Saul going to do? He might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. Now, as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and he heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" Now, here's something about Saul. He is, at this point, one of the most intelligent people. Paul is absolutely brilliant. He knows all the arguments. He knows his scripture. He could do jujitsu for how to explain God and how to define who God is and how to rationalize God. But here we find Saul, and he has totally missed Jesus because he's stuck in his head. He's hiding behind his intellect. He's hiding behind words and truths that he's holding in his head, but it hasn't worked his way into his heart. So now he is going to Damascus in order to take prisoners, those who are following Jesus, those who he intellectually disagrees with. He's going to take them prisoner. Maybe he will do them harm. Maybe some of these prisoners will meet their death. And now all of a sudden, as he's walking, he sees this light and he hears this voice. And Saul asks, "Who are you, Lord? Where is that sound coming from? Who is speaking to me? It's none of my friends here who are traveling with me. Where's that voice coming from? I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." Now, this story takes place long after the resurrection of Jesus, not in the few days after when Jesus appeared to his disciples. This took place after that. "So whom are you? I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The men traveling with Saul, they stood there speechless. Why are they speechless? Because they can't explain what's happening. Just like Paul, they're probably intelligent men. They've heard Saul's arguments about who God is, his arguments about Jesus and how Jesus is not someone worth following. They have all these arguments in their head, but now they're speechless because it defies logic. This experience is something beyond what they can comprehend, something that beyond what they can put into words. See, they heard the sound. They didn't see anyone. Like, what is going on here? Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days, he was blind, and he did not eat or drink anything. What does God do here? God goes beyond, around, we could say, Saul's intellect in order to get to his heart. Jesus, God, religion, for Paul, it was an intellectual pursuit that he was holding in his head. Resurrection is something that goes around your intellect. All the arguments that you could create, what God does here, he goes around it and says, I'm just going to go straight to your heart. I'm going to get your attention in another way, through experience. Here's another of my favorite resurrection stories. It's in Luke. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. Two of these disciples of Jesus. Now we're at the point in the story where Jesus has died on a cross and everyone is depressed. Because here's the person that you've been following. Now he is gone. He's met his death. Every single person is depressed because the Savior that you were hoping for is no longer alive. He went and got himself killed. So two of the disciples, they are leaving Jerusalem. Jerusalem is where the party had happened. Now they were going back home completely deflated. You know, have you ever gone to a Rangers game? And at the end of the game, you're walking down that tunnel. And if the Rangers win, you're very happy to be in that crowd because everyone, they've had a lot of beer. And so everyone is really, really excited because your team won. But now think about what it's like if you're going down that tunnel, if you're walking down the stairs and the Rangers have lost. It's like all the air has left the room. You feel completely deflated. Anytime you go anywhere, any sports team, any event, if it was a downer, you walk away with your heart. Your heart is sunk a little bit. And so there's this collective depression all throughout because Jesus has died. He did not fulfill the thing that he said he was going to fulfill. Now they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, guess who showed up? Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. Two people talking about Jesus. Jesus walks right next to them, and they have no idea who it is. Why? Because resurrection defies logic. It doesn't make sense. If this person you've been following just went and got killed, and you saw with your own eyes this person got killed, who's the last person that you're expecting to be walking with you on the road? Jesus. There's no way, because it goes beyond intellect. Jesus asked them, hey guys, what are you talking about? Like, what's going on? Why are you so downcast? They stood there, right? There you go, their faces downcast. And one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you dull, man? Do you know what just happened? You're asking us what we're talking. Have you not heard the news? It's front page. Did your phone not buzz with a notification? Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days? Well, what are you talking? What things? I love this. It's like a stand-up comedy act. About Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. Chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since this took place. Why is this important? Jesus had said he was going to be raised on the third day, and now here we are on the third day, and none of it has taken place. I mean, I'm sure at this point, Jesus has a little smirk on his face. I mean, wouldn't you, if you were raised from the dead, and here you are walking with these people that are talking about you? You'd do the same thing, right? You all know how this would go. In addition, some of our women amazed us. Amazed us mean tried to trick us here. What are these women doing? What are they talking about? They went to the tomb, but they didn't find his body. They came, they told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb. They found it just as the women had said, but they didn't see Jesus. Like, the tomb's empty. Like, what's the deal here? Jesus isn't there. Someone must have stolen his body. Like, the last thing they're expecting at this point is for Jesus to actually do the thing that he was talking about. And they had all these arguments about why it didn't or couldn't happen. And Jesus said to them, how foolish you are and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, I love it, Jesus gives them a little Bible lesson. It's like Torah 101 right here. He just walks them through the entire story. He explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. They still don't recognize it. He's like, hey guys, I'm here. He's trying to explain it in all these different ways. They still don't understand. As they approached, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, hey, stay with us. It's nearly evening. It's a dangerous road. Just hang out with us. And so he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Only then were their eyes opened. I mean, Jesus must have been serving quite a bit of food in his life. That it's when he was breaking the bread, giving them some food to eat. How did we not recognize him before? And then what does Jesus do? As soon as they recognize him, he's gone. He just ghosted them. I love these stories. And they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Jesus was trying all different ways to show them, hey, look, I'm here. He gave them scripture. He walked through the story. And yet it wasn't until the experience of sharing a meal together that these disciples recognized who Jesus was. Again, Jesus goes around the intellect in order to get to the heart. I think sometimes we stay stuck because we try to rationalize things. I do this all the time. I'm in my head so often. And I heard that phrase in Ted Lasso, can't hide behind your intellect. And for this doctor, for this psychologist, it was as those walls, as those barriers, that protective mechanism began to break down that she had a breakthrough. And it was all because of experience. Resurrection is something to be experienced. And I don't think the disciples should get to have all the fun. I think we should get to join in on the fun as well. One of the things that I've noticed for Kit and Reese is 5, almost 6, Kit is 3. Whatever Reese does, Kit wants to do as well. If you have kids, have you ever noticed this with your kids? Whatever the older one wants to do, or if Kit does something, Reese, same thing, he wants to do it. I mean, we're talking something as simple as if there are stairs and then a walkway. If Reese walks up the walkway and we're holding Kit's hand in order to go up the stairs with her, she rips her hand away from you and says, no, I want to be like Reese and I want to walk up the walkway too. There is nothing we can do to stop her. Whatever Reese does, she wants to experience as well. I have a video of sledding to prove this point. Whatever Reese does, Kit wants to do as well. This is the path that we are being invited to walk. For the disciples to whom Jesus appeared, we are being invited to experience the resurrected Christ just as they experienced the resurrected Christ. These words weren't written in the Bible just so that we could intellectually hold them in our heads, but so that we could walk the same path that they walked and experience the same power of resurrection that they experienced in their lives. These stories, it's great because they show how dull the disciples were. They couldn't even recognize Jesus. And then you had Saul hiding behind logic and rationale. And God goes around all of it because what God desires is your heart. Intellect is good. It can be helpful, but it comes after the experience. Intellect is to try in some way to put words to that which you have experienced. But the number one thing that God desires, the number one thing that I believe you here this morning want, is to experience the resurrected Christ in your life. So a final question for us. Let's make this really practical. How do you experience resurrection in your life today? You leave your intellect at the door. There's some of us here, we've been hiding behind arguments. We've been trying to control how God shows up, where the resurrected Christ shows up. We have to stop trying to control how, when, and where the resurrected Christ shows up in our lives. It's almost as if we're trying to tell God how to be God. And we try to tell Jesus how to be Jesus, how to be the resurrected Jesus. How do you experience resurrection? You set all that to the side and you open up your heart to experience resurrection in every moment. The two stories that we looked at, where did Jesus show up? Ordinary moments of life. While Saul was walking, he was going on a business trip. While the two disciples were walking home, Jesus, the resurrected Christ, shows up in the ordinary moments of life. And I would also argue, the resurrected Christ appears in our greatest moments of need and weakness. Think about those two disciples on that road, downcast, depressed, deflated. Jesus shows up right in that moment, their greatest moment of need. Think about Saul. What was he doing? He was going to persecute followers of Jesus. The resurrected Christ showed up to him in his greatest moment of weakness and need and said, hey, there's something better for you. There's a new way of living that you're not experiencing. And I want you to have this experience so that you can see life in a whole new way. So how do we experience resurrection? I would say, what's your greatest moment of need right now? Where have things gone numb? Where does life feel lifeless? Where has the blood been drained from your soul? Where has all the color been sucked out of your life? I would argue that is your greatest need. It's your greatest weakness at this point. And that's where the resurrected Christ loves to show up so that you can experience the power of resurrection.